The Russian general Igor Kirillov was leaving his apartment in southeast Moscow this morning with an assistant when a bomb planted in a scooter just outside his door exploded, killing them both. The general was in charge of Russia's nuclear, biological, chemical defence forces, and only yesterday Ukraine had charged him with using banned chemical weapons in Ukraine. Today they admitted killing him. Russia has described it as a terrorist act. Well, General Kirillov often spoke for the Russian government, was known for making accusations about Ukraine's use of chemical weapons. In August this year, Russian media asked him whether Ukraine could realistically create a dirty bomb.
Грязная бомба, но
A dirty bomb? Well, we're not going to reveal secrets. In actual fact, it's not that difficult. I think they have one. There have been uses of poisonous substances which could only have been synthesized by the United States, because other industries aren't meant for that and have never produced it. All our fears have been passed on to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons in accordance with the established procedure, but so far there's been no reaction.
Well, I'm joined now by the former commander of UK and NATO's chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear forces, Colonel Hamish de Breton-Gordon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sarah.
Did you know, had you come across General Kirillov?
Yes, absolutely. He's been in post since 2017. And although I commanded the same sort of unit for NATO and the UK, my role was very much defensive, whereas his role is very much offensive. He was involved in the Salisbury poisonings. His organization would have provided the nerve agent Novichok and trained the GRU units who tried to assassinate Sergei Skripal in Salisbury, where I'm talking to you from. I also saw his work in Syria. He worked alongside General Sorovkin, who produced what we call the playbook, which Russia then subsequently used in Ukraine, attacking civil infrastructure, but then also chemical weapons. And Kirillov saw how effective chemical weapons were in Syria. In fact, you know, I believe kept Assad in his role until last week, sort of 13 years after he used chemical weapons. And then into Ukraine, we've seen extensive use of chemical weapons in the last 18 months. And as you say, the Ukraine government indicted Kirillov for 5,000 uses of chemical weapons, predominantly a chemical called chloropicrin, which was the first chemical weapon used in the First World War. People more commonly know it as riot control agents, but it's been incredibly effective. And I've looked at it closely, and I think those figures of 5,000 are pretty accurate. And actually, a lot of the Russian gains, particularly in the Donbass in the last 12 months, have been because the chemical weapons have been used. And I think the Ukrainians, and myself included, exasperated that they've been able to use them, you know, virtually unhindered.
The claims that you suggest there, like that his involvement with the Novichok poisoning in Salisbury and of sending chemical weapons to Syria, is one able to track the chemical weapons so that you can have a record and effectively draw the line back to him?
Yes, absolutely. Chemical attribution is something that is done for exactly those reasons, and places like our own Porton Down are experts at doing that. So the Novichok, which was used in the Salisbury event, was traced back to a place called Shekhani in Russia, about 200 miles east, 200 kilometers east of Moscow, which is where Russia does or used to do all its chemical and biological and radiological activity. They then actually moved it after that. But yes, absolutely, you can trace. Chemicals produce a sort of footprint like DNA, so certainly you can do that.
Colonel de Breton-Gordon, thanks very much. Well, let's turn now to Steve Rosenberg, who has been at the scene of that attack this morning and joins us from Moscow. Steve, what did you see there this morning? I mean, it seems remarkably an effective way of doing about it. Very simple, but remotely controlled.
Remotely controlled, yes. Well, when we went to the scene, there was a police cordon up, of course. We could see Russian investigators collecting evidence. We could see the entranceway to the building, to the block of flats, severely damaged, of course, and some windows in a building opposite had been blown out. And I talked to local residents who were completely shocked by what had happened. You know, for many Muscovites, even though this war, that Russia's war in Ukraine, has been going on for, nearly 3 years, for many people here, it's something that happens a long way away, right? It's something that they see on their television screens or on their phones. It doesn't really feel real. What has happened today, this early morning blast, the killing of a top Russian general, that has really brought it home, that actually this is a real war, and it is happening close to home. And that's the shock, I think, for people. And sometimes you hear of Ukrainian drones targeting Moscow. Sometimes that happens. But actually, most people get on with their lives. But something like this, I think, has caused a sense of shock and a deep uncertainty as well, I'd say, about what is going to happen next.
Well, how important was this man to Russia?
He was a very prominent figure. Absolutely. I mean, the head of, you know, Russia's nuclear, biological, chemical protective forces. This was a senior military man who was very often on Russian television, very often accusing Ukraine of committing crimes, accusing the West of committing crimes. That is why his killing, I think, has made such an impact here and caused such a sense of shock.
And just briefly, Steve, what are Russia saying about it?
Well, Russian officials are blaming Ukraine, of course, but they're also suggesting that somehow Western countries orchestrated this attack. And I think there's little doubt that there will be some kind of response retaliation from Moscow.
Steve Rosenberg, thanks very much.